You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. We're going to talk a little basketball, a little baseball today. Razorbacks back in action this afternoon over at Baumwalker Stadium. Going to play Arkansas State. Basketball will be at Bud Walton Arena tomorrow night to take on Texas A&M. A big game in terms of Arkansas trying to stay in this SEC race going into the weekend where they play Florida down in Gainesville. Tom Murphy is in studio with me. We'll talk basketball first. We'll pivot to baseball here in a little bit. You were at the game Saturday against Missouri. Razorbacks win 94-86. They didn't get the 30-plus point performance from Darius Acuff, like it seems, or close to 30, like it seems they've gotten a lot, but they did get a lot of balance. Acuff had a nice game, 20 points. Billy Richmond continues to play really well offensively. Just what were some of the takeaways that you had from that game? Because it felt like, and I'll say this, Tom, going into it, I was afraid that Arkansas might be a little lackadaisical. They'd had the late game against Alabama, double overtime, had to play extra minutes, had to travel back. And I just had this thought, you know, hey, this is a good Missouri team. They might come in here and hit Arkansas. And they kind of did a little early, but Arkansas was able to weather it. And then it felt like in the second half that the Razorbacks never were really in a lot of trouble.
You're speaking my language, Matt. That was the same concern I had coming into that game. And I think it played out a little bit in the first half. And John Calipari clearly had that same idea and said, to the point that he says on the podium postgame, I had a speech ready to go to defend my players. If we came out flat, we did not perform, basically we lost, I was prepared to defend them. And I do believe whatever – Danny Sheridan, the odds maker, used to have this saying about it's hard to get up for every football game. Mm-hmm. And so the same could apply to basketball. And after the emotional – you and reach an emotional peak like you did against Bama. It is hard to recreate the same energy level, the same dynamism that you need on every play. And I felt a little bit of that as Missouri kind of built that lead. They got the ball inside way too easy for a lot of the first half. But to their credit, they did respond. I think a young guy like Acuff is already a great leader for this team, and they kind of follow him. I thought Trevor Brazil's mature presence helped. And they overcame, and they got better defensively during the game. And it didn't really, pull away with great authority, but they pulled away enough. And Richmond mm-hmm. played a big role in that. And it just showed, as Calipari said, he told his assistants, if we play better tonight than I expect, then I think we might really have something. So mm-hmm. in his view, that win translates to they might really have something.
I mean, keep in mind, Missouri beat Florida this year. They're one of only two SEC teams that have beaten Florida. So that tells you what kind of potential that Missouri has. And that game was in Columbia. It's a different deal when you're going into a different environment, and I understand that. But I don't discount this win at all, and I don't think anybody else. But it's like I think that this is a really impressive win over a team that's fighting for their tournament lives in Missouri. And again, you got all that stuff that they just came off of with Alabama. It'd be easy to overlook Missouri with A&M and Florida coming up this week. I thought that was it'd be a character win, might be the way to put it.
It was a great win. And Missouri has won games at A&M before anybody in conference had done that. And they have a road win at Kentucky. So they're a legit team. I like the makeup of their roster. They're a lot of big guys, a couple of seven-footers. Maybe they could use another tall guard, a real good ball handler. Their guards are a little short, but I like the way they play. I was telling Anthony Christensen on game day, I really like Dennis Gates' courtside demeanor. Just very composed, doesn't get too upset. Other coaches just lose their temper. Mike Krzyzewski, great coach, just lost his temper too much, for my opinion. But I like Dennis Gates. And while we're talking, I don't know at the proper point to put this in, but I'm going to say this about the Arkansas basketball team. They've got to watch themselves. I think they rise to the occasion and get in little squabbles and things mm-hmm. and do things. And they did it the other night. Trevor Brazil setting a screen was very obvious. He ran up to set a screen, stuck his foot out. Other teams are going to note this behavior, and they're going to try to get them to rise to that and get technical fouls in the postseason. And they've got to be smarter than that. The Kentucky game, Kentucky self-imploding. They got, three personal technical fouls, right. and Pope got one. So they're melting down a little bit. Arkansas has now caught them, and then Malik Ewing directs the ball down, doesn't do it, maybe intentional, directs the ball down into the guy's face.
Yeah.
At first, when I thought they called a tee on him, I didn't agree, but then I saw the replay. Mm-hmm. He kind of dragged his foot across the dude's face. That's a technical foul.
Billy Richmond had the one at the end of the half.
That's what I mean. Missouri. The one where you just kind of stick your hand out, mm-hmm. and then your hand brushes up against the guy's face. And Trevin Brazile in that one game, he's whipping his towel around, and it just happens to hit a guy in the stands. Don't do that stuff. You've got to be smarter. Mm-hmm. And if Cal and his staff need to preach that to those players, it's going to cost you in the postseason.
Yeah, it's been an issue with them many times this year. It's been something we talked about on this podcast before that, if you're – in some games, it's not going to cost you, but in the most important ones, it probably is.
So
especially now, Tom, when you're dealing with a lack of depth, every personal foul is like gold for this team.
You can get ejected. Yep. Like, you can make a move and get ejected. You didn't really mean it, but you did it, and you're ejected, and it could be very costly. They need to know that now.
And we saw what happened at the end of the Alabama game. You get to a certain point, you get past seven players, maybe eight if Sealy's back, and it becomes a totally different basketball team. It reminded me, when I was in high school, there was a district tournament for my high school, and it was a girls' game, and it ended up going, I think, to two overtimes, and one team had so many players foul out that they ended the game 5-on-3.
Wow.
And you felt bad for them, but it was they just didn't have enough players.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like watching the end of the Alabama game. Uh-huh. I know it was 5-on-5, but it was clearly five quality players against three quality players for Arkansas. And then, they've got this thing where they don't recruit, as many players as other teams. And I'm talking about high-end players. And that's the risk you run into now with Carter Knox being out, with Isaiah Sealy. And I mean, who's to say that there may not be another injury or a bump or a bruise that keeps somebody out?
And that's why the Kentucky game, I'll go back to that one. The officials had just called all those technicals in a row on Kentucky and Pope. So they're kind of looking for a way to balance the scales. And if you act out of character, you're going to get hit. And I think Ewan got one, and there might have been another one by Arkansas in that game too. Maybe late in the game, but it seemed like they got two or three. Mm-hmm. Just be on your best behavior at that point, man. You've just gotten all these breaks. Don't do those things.
I tell you, the thing I love about this team right now is what Billy Richmond is bringing to him offensively. He's always brought the hustle. He's brought the energy. He's been the rebounder. But now, I mean, he got a little bit of a jump shot going for him. And he's so good, as good as maybe anybody that I've ever seen at Arkansas, at going into the lane, and it looks like there is no way for him to get to the basket. And, he just – it's. You ever watch The Santa Claus with Tim Allen? When he goes down the chimney and he just kind of becomes goo, and then that's kind of what it's like watching Billy Richmond. It's like, how is he getting through this space? But he does. He'll make a shot. He'll get fouled. Maybe it's a three-point play. He's incredible at this. And he's added he's added something offensively to this team. Last three games, 25, 21, and 20 points. And I don't know if that's sustainable for him. But, boy, if it is, that's a nice compliment to what you're getting from Acuff and Thomas and Brazile every now and then.
Absolutely it is. His ball handling has gotten better. He did a lot of the same things last year. He's got a fantastic first step. I can't think of someone right now off the top of my head who had a better first step. Like, a guy's guarding on the perimeter. First step, he's around him. He's at the lane. He'd lost the ball more often last year. He went in more recklessly last year. And I thought, if he keeps doing the same thing, it's going to be the same result. No, it's improved. Those spin shots off the backboard, the reverses and things like that, he's gotten so much better at those because he clearly practices them a lot. And you're right. It adds a dimension. You get into the postseason when you need, in the half court, you need to come up with something. That is a good option for them because he's been successful at it more frequently than he was last year.
Darius Acuff was the SEC Player of the Week this week. First time he's gotten Player of the Week. He's been Freshman of the Week quite a bit. You wrote today that he's taken over the scoring lead in the SEC. In your mind, has he taken over the lead to be SEC Player of the Year?
Man, just scout through the whole system and who has had a better year. I mean, Phylon scoring is similar, but Acuff's assists are so much better, and just team leadership and things like that. Although Phylon does get assists, he's definitely in the conversation top two, three, because usually they come off a really good team. So you got to eliminate Josh Hubbard because of that reason, who's a great scorer. But Chinyelu from Florida comes to mind. He's been a great rebounder, double-figure rebounder, but not the scorer. I would think Acuff has as good a shot at anybody right now at that.
We've both been asked to vote in these AP awards before. I mean, you do a lot of AP football awards. I voted in the AP basketball, player of the year, coach of the year before. I wonder, what do you look for when you're looking for player of the year? Because You know, that's a coaches, they get a vote, but reporters or some reporters, they get a vote too. Like how do you balance this? Because you mentioned Acuff and the leadership that he has for his team. I think that goes a long way for me when I'm looking at this. Like, you know, are you having a great year, but you've got somebody really good that you're playing off of who may be a player of the year candidate too?
Right.
Or are you putting the team on your back and leading them maybe to a place that they wouldn't be if you weren't there? And that's what I see with Acuff. I think that, you know, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, there may not be a more valuable player to their team this year in the SEC than Acuff is to Arkansas.
Well, we intimately kind of know the Arkansas roster and how game to game. People who are voting on this in Florida or Texas or something may not know is, but if you watch him on TV enough, you'll have seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Just his demeanor on the court too. I've been astounded with that all year. So yes, I look for those intangible type things. About the balance, you know, they don't have a ton of turnovers. They don't get in foul trouble. They don't do stupid stuff on the court a lot. And I should have mentioned Thomas Hauff, by the way, at Florida. I think he might be as strong a contender as Darius Acuff Jr. is. But, yeah, all of those factors I put into my consideration when I do Player of the Year voting.
Texas A&M got off to a great start to the season. I think they were 7-0 in the SEC. And then we saw it that they were going to run into a rough patch. And it's just, how do you navigate that rough patch? And as of right now, they're 9-5 in the league. They could still potentially win the SEC, but, you know, they're three games back of Florida with four games to play. It's unlikely that they're going to do that. Arkansas still got a really good chance, and especially with the game at Gainesville this weekend. How do you forecast, handicap this game tomorrow night?
Well, A&M did lose, so they didn't get off to a 7-0 because they lost at Tennessee.
Okay, and I think they were 7-1. I think they were 7-1.
But I watched the end of that game at Auburn where, you know, they were down by 16, I think, and then they had an 11-0 run in, mm-hmm. I think, 23 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Buckyball, if you lose your patience and start throwing it away, what can happen? And then with their three-point shooting prowess. I diagnosed the game like this. Arkansas by now has already figured out who they want in the backcourt inbounding and how they want to break the press, because that's the step number one. And then what do? Arkansas in the open court has been so good with lob passes, and no matter what combination of guys getting to the rim, they throw lobs to each other. They drive to the hole. You know, some of them don't have great handles. Nick Pringle comes to mind. But if you break the press, how aggressive are you going to be at attacking the basket or shooting threes to make A&M pay? So that all that goes into the calculus of what you do. Then how much will you use timeouts if, for instance, A&M forces two turnovers in a row in your backcourt and converts threes off of them,
mm-hmm.
the way they did against Auburn? So I can't answer for John Calipari and staff, but I think more ball handling duties for DJ Wagner. Acuff's got the left ankle, which we everyone knows. So A&M is going to try to pressure, make him have to stop and pivot, move on his left ankle. So does Malik Thomas have good enough ball handling for him to maybe take more of that load, or for DJ Wagner to take more of that load as you're breaking the press? Then the decision is, what do you do with the ball when you cross half court? Who's left to defend for them, and how aggressive you want to be? They're not super tall, but AG and a few others are pretty good around the rim.
And can Thomas stay out of foul trouble? Like that's been an issue with him here.
Yeah.
I thought the Alabama game really turned whenever he got into foul trouble. That's what you go back, turning point of that game was Malik Thomas going to the bench for a little while. A&M started 7-1 in the SEC. They lost a close game. Then they lost four in a row. Lost to Bama on the road close. Got blown out by Florida at home. Lost a close one to Missouri at home. Lost big to Vanderbilt on the road. They've won two in a row. Close games over Ole Miss at home and at OU over the weekend. So they're 9-5 in the SEC. You look at the SEC standings right now, Florida 12-2 in the league. They're obviously in the driver's seat, and if they win both of their games this week, it's going to be almost impossible for anybody to catch them. Alabama, Arkansas, and Tennessee are all tied at 10-4. Razorbacks play at Florida on Saturday. College Game Day is going to be there, by the way. It'll be the second time that Arkansas has been featured in a College Game Day basketball game, the first being a couple of years ago when Kentucky came here to Bud Walton Arena. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or online at bentonvilleglass.com. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Arkansas baseball back in action this afternoon. It's going to be a 3 o'clock first pitch, so by the time some of you listen to this, they may have already started, they may have already ended. But 3 o'clock first pitch over at Baum Walker Stadium. Arkansas State is in town. Red Wolves are 5-2 overall. Arkansas 6-1. The Razorbacks fell to number 6 in the coaches poll yesterday. Mississippi State jumped over them. Mississippi State and Arkansas, they were, like, if you look at the voting points, I think 8 points separated them in the preseason. Arkansas has got the loss to TCU. Mississippi State has not played as good a schedule as Arkansas has, but Mississippi State is undefeated. They actually got one of the first place votes in this week's coaches poll. LSU's number 1, UCLA's number 2. They got all the other first place votes this week. Arkansas State is a better program now that Mike Silva has come in. He's in his second year there, used to be the head coach at Nichols. It takes a while to come in and kind of, you know, implement what you want the program to look like. And certainly, you know, it's a tall task over in Jonesboro to get people to buy into baseball when there really just has never been much of a baseball presence there with that program. I think this is going to be an interesting series, midweek series. I think it's got the potential to be a really interesting one. I think it's got the potential to be really close. But as Mike Silva told me yesterday, Tom, he said, nobody is more interested in seeing how this thing goes than I am. They went to Ole Miss. They played Ole Miss close last week. They had Ole Miss on the rope, set them down 6-3 in the fifth inning, and then Ole Miss nickel and dimed its way back in and walked them off in the ninth. So we know they can go into an SEC ballpark and be competitive. On the flip side, you got Arkansas. They want to get a lot of these guys on the mound because they didn't get a chance to get very many on the mound over the weekend. Gabe Gackle pitched pretty well. They only used, I think, 3 bullpen arms the entire weekend. Colin Fisher went the distance on Sunday. So this is, you know, this is what these midweek games are about. There's a little bit of a developmental aspect to it. And I think both teams are very interested to see how this thing's going to go. You just never know with midweek baseball.
You don't. And to me, the mystery part is what Arkansas State's pitching is going to look like. So, but you, Tate McGuire, excellent debut. And it was against TCU,
mm-hmm.
5 innings. And so where will he fit in? Will he start Wednesday or will they try to back him up in Tuesday's game?
Mm-hmm.
But he got off to such a great start. I feel bad for the bullpen guys because if a guy like Fisher throws very well, or say Peyton Lee throws very well today, then your chances get minimized. Poor Joey Lorenzini, mm-hmm. was up and hot in the bullpen and ready to come in.
He was going
to
pitch the ninth.
And was going to pitch, and he didn't get the chance because he looked really good in their last scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt Hobbs is, and you probably know a little bit more intimately how the potential for their bullpen. But the total amount of arms I see is quite fascinating with Arkansas. And the big question is, how well are they going to hit? Is the bottom of their order, is T.J. Pompey going to, you know, cut down on his strikeouts, get on mm-hmm. baseball? Is Mike Anew going to respond? So I like the 3, 4, 5 holes, even 2, but are the other guys going to respond?
Well, you know, there's going to be changes to the lineup at some point in time. I don't know when, but – the next time that I see a lineup at the end of the season that looks like the lineup at the beginning of the season will be the first time. And I thought it was really interesting listening to Dave Van Horn the other day when I asked him about Nolan Souza and his defense. And he said, you know, if we play him, we might play him at third. Well, that kind of stuck out to me. It's like, is there actually a plan there? And it wouldn't surprise me if there is. To see him play at third base, you know, you got Carson Brumbaugh kind of scuffling at shortstop. We know T.J. Pompey can play short. Or, you know, Pompey, he's not hitting the best right now. I just wonder if maybe one of these midweek games you get Nolan Souza out there at third base. Van Horn said we might play him in. If you just get him out there and just see how it goes in a game. That, again, that's what midweek games are about, developmental. This would be an opportunity, I think, over the next couple of days to maybe get him out on the field and just see how that looks defensively if you were to try that route.
I don't disagree with you. And what's cool that we've been covering Dave Van Horn teams long enough to know is if things don't work a certain way, they will try something else, whether it's pitching staff, batting order, or on the field. I mean, think about last year when Souza went down. Gabe Frazier came in for a while, looked like he mm-hmm. might have a chance to stick at second. But then when they moved Kojal to second and put Reese Robinette in, that kind of became the combination that pushed them right through into the postseason. So along those lines, everybody's got to be on their guard that you got to be a better, you got to be a more disciplined hitter, take walks. And so the writing's on the wall for TJ Pompey, be a more disciplined hitter, or we're going to see what someone else can do. And they all know this when you come to Arkansas and sign with Dave Van Horn, there's enough of a track record. He's going to experiment. And so all those things you mentioned are all possibilities.
Now, on the flip side, third and short, those are a couple of positions, third less so than short, where defense is going to dictate a lot about who plays there. And, you know, what we've seen from Brumbaugh and Pompey has been really good defense.
It absolutely has been. And then, you know, Kojal, I think there might have been a player too. Like, maybe he misjudged a soft liner during the Xavier series that kind of went under his glove. But, you know, that might have been in the sun. I'm not really sure what happened. But they're going to keep his bat in there whenever possible.
Oh, yeah.
But, yes, all these combinations. But I have liked what I've seen from Brumbaugh on the field. He had a couple of errors in one of the scrimmages that led into the season. But I think in season he's been fine, and Pompey's made a couple of really nice plays.
I thought Peyton Lee pitched really well last week against Tarleton State. He got himself in some jams. I think there were two innings where a runner got into third and he got out of it. I think there was another inning where a runner got to second and he got out of it. And then in the fifth inning, they ended up getting a triple on a play where, honestly, it wasn't bad defense, but I think Pompey, I don't think he triples if Pompey holds the ball. It was a good relay throw to third, and Pompey just couldn't hold the ball at third base. And then the Turner got hurt on that play, and he's down for a couple of minutes. Play resumes. Peyton Lee's next pitch gets doubled into left field, and that's it. They go and they get another one because, you know, the game's on the line right there, and you got a freshman, and you know, his pitch count's up. I think he'd thrown 70-something pitches at that point. And I certainly understood them making the change when they did right there. But I thought he pitched well last week. I've been impressed with what I've seen from him in scrimmages. I've been impressed what I've seen from him with runners on base. Not just the game against Tarleton last week, but it was something that we've seen from him in the inter-squad scrimmages too. It seems like there's a comfort level with him whenever runners get on against him.
Yes, and we spoke about Therese Robinette after that final scrimmage, and he brought that up on his own, that he did a good job holding guys on the bag. So for a guy who's been around as long as Reese Robinette has to make that observation about Peyton Lee, I think it's pretty cool. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that delay on the field with the Turner injury. You know, when he hit Ryder Helfrich on the forearm in his final scrimmage, and it was on a Sunday, I think, there was a delay, you know, in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You remember his next pitch, I believe he gave up some damage. And so, you know, I've hit a teammate on the hand, a very valuable teammate at that. What was his mentality for that next pitch? And so I don't know, but he didn't last much longer after that. So that's the kind of thing that they've got to be wary of. He gets into a pressure situation, fifth inning, how he's going to respond if there's been a delay in the game and he has to refocus.
Peyton is the cousin of Evan Lee, who played for the Nationals. He's the pitching coach at Little Rock now. Of course, used to be here and was a good two-way player for Arkansas. And then I believe Evan's sister is married to Jordan Wicks, who's a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. And I was talking to Peyton in the preseason, and he said, you know, like, I'm texting with those guys every day, and that's a big resource for me. And you think about that, and like just kind of these little things that can help a freshman get ahead. I mean, having that kind of guidance in your life, you know, where you can just shoot a text to a big league pitcher who's your cousin or another one who's married into the family. I mean, holy cow, that's not to mention that the tools there are pretty good too.
No doubt about that. And you get that kind of veteran support and input from people. It's great news. And honestly, we've been around Dave Van Horn, Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson long enough to know they run a first-class observation from all the analytics they glean and how they apply those to the field. I mean, you hear player after player talk about how their approach – and they can be funny and laugh. In fact, yesterday's, or maybe it's today's, where Matt Hobbs is talking about Colin Fisher having a chance to throw a perfect game, but his big butt's in the way on the comebacker. They can be that kind of lighthearted with the guys, but also when it comes to learning and applying skills on the field, quite serious. And I think that's one of the great makeups of Van Horn and his staff.
I think Arkansas State's got some questions about what they're going to do from a pitching standpoint. When I was talking to Mike Silva, he said, you know, we got to get our weekend rotation figured out. I think that's going to affect who they throw this weekend or in this midweek here in Fayetteville. Just a few players to watch for them, though, from an offensive standpoint. They got a center fielder, Ashton Quiller, who is batting .419 with a home run and six RBI. Their shortstop, Patrick Ingsko, .379, three doubles, two home runs, and six RBI. That's the son of John Ingsko, who's a really good he was a walk-on on Arkansas's basketball team in 1994. He was also on the 95 team, so part of that golden era of Razorback basketball. And Patrick actually has a younger brother named Harrison, who's in junior college, who's going to be at Arkansas State next season. And then their second baseman, he's really their big bopper. He only bats .267. I think there's probably, like with a lot of power hitters, probably some strikeout that he deals with. But Lane Walton is his name. Five home runs, one double, one triple, and 12 RBI coming into the game. Arkansas is 38th nationally with 11 home runs. Arkansas 16th nationally with 13. And the Red Wolves have a better slugging percentage than Arkansas, .492. That ranks in the top 50 in college baseball.
Nice numbers for Arkansas State. I'm really, really interested to see what they look like out on the field today and tomorrow. And a good quality midweek competition for the Razorbacks.
You remember they had Arkansas when they came here last year. It was a really competitive game. I think it might have been the 6th, 7th, 8th inning, Arkansas hit a couple of opposite field home runs that gave them some breathing room. But I think it was a 3-3 game or a 4-3 game, something like that, like late into the game. And it felt like Arkansas was going to really be battling right down to the end, which they did against Arkansas State. But it was such a contrast from the year before when A-State had come in here and they'd gotten run rolled 13-0. And even 23, I think they got rained out and they couldn't come over. 22 when they came over here, those were not competitive games. I just, and again, you look at what they did against Ole Miss last week. I think that this coach, Silva, who came from Nichols, and he had some success down there in Louisiana, I think he's going to have some success there. Now, it's a tough baseball conference. The Sun Belt is an extremely tough baseball conference. That's where Coastal Carolina is. That's where Southern Miss is. Troy is really good. I could go on and on. There's really good baseball in that conference. And so they've got a big hill to climb within their conference. But you just look at them from a competitive standpoint, and I think that makes a difference. And I think that what they did in Fayetteville last year, what they did in Oxford last week, I think shows that this is a program that's on a good track. We'll see what happens in Fayetteville the next couple of days. But I wouldn't be surprised if at least one of these two games, Arkansas State gives Arkansas some problems, at least until, late in the game.
Well, you have a better recall for last year's game against Arkansas State than I do.
I read about it yesterday.
Okay, well, and I am even trying to remember if I attended that one or not. But anyway, it brings up the whole question of your scheduling. And Xavier reached out to Arkansas to play that series, mm-hmm. and I like their team. Now, when they get Mish and Burdett back, they'll be a stronger team. Mm-hmm. But they gave Arkansas a nice run for two games, and I'm going to pay attention to how they perform out in California this weekend, and then they also go to Oregon, and they play Georgia Tech.
Oregon and Oregon State, yeah. Two really good baseball teams.
And so having had the conversation I did with Billy O'Connor, I'm a little bit invested in how they finish mm-hmm. this year. And if they win a series out there, I'm going to text him.
Well, Xavier's one of those weekends where they swept them, and I think that it's got the potential. We'll see what happens. They got to get healthy. But I think it's got the potential to be one of those series that you look back at the end of the season and say, that was a really good weekend for the RPI, for the strength of schedule. I think those of us who kind of know what Xavier is and what they have appreciated what happened last weekend. I think it's easy for someone who maybe just is kind of a score gazer, maybe to say, okay, well, Arkansas did what they're supposed to against Xavier.
Right.
I think that person might be more impressed by that, say, in 3 months than they were this last weekend.
Well, I honestly hope they are, because I want them to heal. I want Mish to improve and Burdett to get better. And it sounded like Burdett might have been on the brink of being able to play. Mm-hmm. So maybe he'll be in this weekend. And I like, their lead guy, Pish. He's going to give them a chance every Friday to win a game. as he did after one inning against Arkansas that he struggled, and then he got 11 or whatever guys in a row. And then their middle guy, Nobi, I thought he was pretty solid too. So,
well, how about Ashton Cronister out of the bullpen?
Ashton Cronister.
That was as impressive relief appearance as we saw all weekend.
It really was. I think 31 pitches, and he got 9 outs.
He faced one under the minimum.
Because he got a double play ball. Yep. And what a great kid, too. You probably saw the quote I got from him on Sunday, which was, did Arkansas show interest in you? Did they recruit you? And he's like, nah, when you throw 80 coming out of high school, that's not going to play at Arkansas. And he goes, I'm not mad at them. I wouldn't have recruited myself either. So I'm really happy. And for his family who were there for him this weekend, I'm happy for him that he had a great performance here. And he seems to have, you know, what a big kid that he's developed well at Xavier.
Arkansas and Arkansas State going to be 3 o'clock in the next 2 days over at Baum Walker Stadium. You can read all about it at our website, wholehogsports.com. Got plenty of basketball coverage. Everything, it feels like, is in season right now at our website, wholehogsports.com. And we are back tomorrow. Anthony Christensen will be here in studio with me. We'll look more at this Arkansas-Texas A&M basketball game at Bud Walton Arena at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Hope to see you then or at our website. Have a great day, everybody.